This is the Final Round Podcast, coming to you live from the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. And now your host, Chris Marquardt.
Good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to episode number 42 of the Final Round Drag Racing Podcast. Got a fun show on deck for everybody tonight. This is going to be Mia Tedesco's episode. I'm excited about that. Jason's been working hard to put that together. We'll be talking with her here in just a few minutes. There was some great racing action over the weekend. We'll get into that. TNT Racing series was at Lancaster and then at Empire. Our guest from last week, Chris Van Balen, ended up second place at
Saturday at Empire.
Yep. So that was cool. Fun show on deck. Loaded show on deck. We're going to be here for at least an hour talking drag racing with everybody. But first and foremost, Jason, how was your weekend?
Oh, my weekend was good. What's not to like about a long holiday weekend for Memorial Day, right?
Sure.
Yeah, it was a good weekend for sure.
All right.
Weather was good, and overall, I know they had a bit of a challenging weekend out at Empire, but overall, they got the show in, and everything turned out good. So yeah, it was good.
That's great. We've got Mia waiting in the wings to come on. What do we got in terms of results for last week? You want to do that now, or you want to catch up with that stuff later on?
Yeah, we'll catch it later.
We'll get
on.
That all that stuff later on. So let's hit on that in a while, and we'll go this route here. Miss Mia Tedesco, the 2016 Super Gas World Champion. Mia, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing okay. Thanks for coming on the show and hanging out with us for a little while.
Thank you guys for having me.
For sure. The World Championship, is that a life-changing event, the way that it would seem on paper? Because it just seems like it's so tough to win one of those. And to pull that off, it had to just rocket ship everything from there.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. You know, I was close the entire year. I can't say it was exactly something I set out to do. I mean, you know, everybody like would like to win a championship, but at the beginning of the year, I wasn't like, my goal this year is to win the championship. It just kind of all fell into place and happened, and I had good race after good race and just went deep, you know, at every race I went to, and my car was good, my guys were on top of everything, and they were good, and it was pretty much just like a fairy tale year, you know, everything, the fouls that sometimes don't fall your way fell my way, and it was pretty amazing. I'm really glad that I had the opportunity to chase it and go after it and actually win one.
I will say, Mia, you know, one thing that I was not aware of up until, I guess, doing a little bit of research for the show, and I guess it makes sense, but you're the first female NHRA Super Gas World Champion ever.
Yeah, that was also another thing that's pretty awesome. I didn't know that going into it. I didn't know that until about probably 2 hours after it was official that I won it, and, I mean, that's just cool in itself.
Oh, that's super cool. I mean, you think about it. I mean, there were certainly some real, trailblazers with regards to female super gas racers. And, you know, I'm thinking back like Vonnie Mills, for instance, who has raced super gas forever. I mean, I was surprised when I read that. And like I said, I mean, I certainly thought about it. And obviously, you know, drag racing is, even though there's a lot of women that are doing it these days, it's still a pretty male-dominated sport. So that's got to be pretty darn cool. Not only to win a Super Gas Championship, but to say, yeah, I'm the first woman to do it is pretty darn cool, too.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, it's male-dominated, and not really something I think about. It doesn't bother me to race a guy. It's kind of weird to race a girl, actually, just because I'm so used to just always racing guys. And
Right.
Just to do stuff, you know, like that, to say that you're the first girl to do something, you know, says a lot and it means a lot. And hopefully there's a few other things I can accomplish in my career that also has that title.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because when you think about it, it's not like really a woman is at any disadvantage behind the wheel, right? It's just that there's a lot fewer women doing it. So, a woman can go out and win a race just as good as a man can, for sure. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It has nothing to do based off of gender.
That's right.
It's whoever, you know, can hit the tree the best and their car is the best that day. I mean, it's really anybody at any time. It's a pretty awesome sport to be involved with that it's not really, I mean, people do dominate here and there, but you just never know. Anybody can win at any time, and I really like that about this.
Yeah, and So it's kind of one of my, one of my stock questions, and I think it's some viewers, regular viewers, are probably sick of hearing me ask the question, but I got to ask it anyways. And, you know, so how did you get involved in the sport? I mean, what was your introduction to the sport itself?
Yeah, I when I was 7 years old, my dad bought Keystone Raceway Park. It's a drag strip in Pittsburgh that's about 20 minutes from my house.
Yep.
And him and my two uncles went up there to look at it, and they asked me if I wanted to go. And I went up there with them, and I saw kids racing, and it was just kind of one of those things where you instantly know that's where you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to be doing. And my uncle actually raced a while ago, so he's pretty familiar with it, and I just picked it up, and I, like I said, I knew that's what I wanted to do. I knew that's where I needed to be, so I told my dad, I was like, I got to do this. One thing led to another, and here I am.
Now, were you when you started, did you start in the juniors like a lot of people of your generation?
Yeah, yep, I started when I was 8 years old, and I raced that until I was about 15, and then when I was 16, I jumped into a big dragster.
Okay, all right. Now, did your dad, when you guys bought Pittsburgh, did your dad have any racing experience at that point in time, or?
No, my dad has never raced, ever. it was more my uncles really wanted him to do it and really wanted to be involved and it'd be a family thing. My Uncle Carmen was the main one that raced and was the most involved with racing, and but my dad, no, he's never raced, never had the interest to race, just always supported me.
Now, I guess, is your dad still involved with Pittsburgh Raceway Park, or?
Yeah, he still owns it, but he leases it out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, that makes sense. I was going to say, I had thought that the track had changed hands a few years ago, but I guess that was when your dad decided to lease the track to the current management.
Correct, yeah. He was pretty involved with his business, but he sold that a few years ago. But traveling with me, I mean, we're gone almost every weekend to different states. It was hard for him to manage that, manage a business, and follow me around the country. So he decided to let someone else leases that could be there every weekend and be completely hands-on.
Right. And is that, I guess, let's call it, is that your dad's job at this point in time? Is he essentially looking out for his daughter and basically trying to make sure his daughter's racing career is going well?
Yeah, I guess so. He's hanging out in Florida a bunch. They're living down there a few months out of the year, and he's enjoying some retired life, I guess you could say. He's still pretty busy. He's still busy with a few businesses and whatnot, and coming to my races, but that's what they're doing right now.
Well, that's super cool. I mean, enjoy the time with your dad while you can. So, I mean, I have to say I'm jealous.
For sure.
Now, what about your uncle? Now, I did see some place along the lines that, does your uncle still have a car? Because did I read that you were racing your uncle's car at a bracket race or something recently?
Yeah. My Uncle Carmen passed away a few years ago. And when he passed away, he left me that Camaro. And that Camaro actually wasn't a race car. It was just a street car that he would drive around, and he's had it for as long as I can remember. He used to come over and pick me up and say, you know, this car's yours whenever I go. This car's yours. I want you to have it, and I want you to race it, and I want you to do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
And we always talked about how cool it would be to turn it into a race car. So when he passed away, I knew it was time to do that.
Right. It's certainly sad that, your uncle is no longer with us, but certainly cool that you're able to continue essentially the legacy of your uncle and the car by continuing to compete with it, right?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely special to me. It's not going to go anywhere. It's going to stay with me for, you know, as long as I can. And getting in that car, I mean, it's hard to have words to describe. You know, it's just a very emotional thing to go through, and I love that I can have that little piece of him with me every race I go to.
Yeah. And I know exactly how that is. You know, my dad passed away 25 plus years ago, and the Corvette that I race today was my dad's race car, and he bought it in 1964, and it's never going to be out of my possession. Now, what's going to happen to it when I go 6 feet under? I don't know, but yeah, it's invaluable to me. And I mean, if someone came up to me and offered me, you know, I know $100,000, I wouldn't sell it. $1 million, I might have to think about it, because I would think my dad would think that I was stupid for not selling it for $1 million. But Yeah, it means the world to me. So I know exactly how you feel with that. Now, the your uncle's Camaro at this point, is it just a foot brake car? Or?
No, it's a bracket car. It has a trans brake delay box. And
so you went all in on it.
It has a small block in it.
So when you converted to a race car, you went all in?
Oh, yeah. It's full chassis, and it's a full race car.
That's very, very cool.
That's the black one that's on the Miss Mia fan page?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Is that the black Camaro that's on the fan page?
Yeah, that's the black Camaro.
I have to say, I didn't see a picture of the car. Chris is probably going to try and...
Well, you just wait.
Yeah, I say he's pulling it up right now to show the viewers the picture of the car. Because
it's a pretty nasty car.
Oh, is it really?
Oh, yeah. It looks great.
And you said it's got a small block in it, Mia?
Yeah, a small block in it. It's all the same... original interior, and it's pretty nice the way they did it.
I will say that I'm looking at a picture of it right now, and that is super cool looking.
Thank you. Yeah, I love it. It's really nice.
It's the interior.
Yeah.
Cool.
Who did the work on that car?
George Warren did all the work. He's from Nashville, Tennessee area.
Okay.
He did a phenomenal job. I gave it to him, and he knew. He did some work for us before, and when we dropped it off there, he knew, you know, how important and special that car was to me.
Yeah.
And he took his time on it, and he really just knocked a home run on it. It's just, you know, it's hard. Pictures don't do it any justice.
What size small block is in that?
I think it's like a 422 in there.
And is it, I'm assuming that it's not streetable anymore?
Oh, it can be, yeah. We put a different fuel cell on it so we could put gas in it and everything. We have a fuel cell in the front, a fuel cell in the back, and then just swap the tires so it is able to drive on the street again one day.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
Now, what's the best ET in that car?
I think I've been like 605, 606.
And the 8th mile, obviously.
Yeah.
And I have to clarify that because you've been almost as fast. Well, you've actually been faster in the quarter mile than that.
Yeah, 517, I think.
and that was certainly one thing I wanted to touch on as well, is that I think you're taking a break from racing top alcohol dragster at this point?
Yep. Yeah, we... after last year with the alcohol car, we kind of were trying to make our schedule for this year and noticed how many big bracket races there are and there were going to be. And it's like every weekend you can race for like the smallest amounts, like $50,000. And we're like, you know what? We can't pass up money like this. If we're going to go for it, we should go for it. And
right.
With our team, we don't like to, you know, we'll do some that, we'll do this, we'll do that, you know. Let's run some divisionals and some bracket races. We found... we're trying to go all over the place. It's hard for us to stay consistent and do well. So we like to just, you know, decide on what we're going to do and then go after it. And at the beginning of the year, Jason and I, we decided we want to go for bracket racing. And that's what, you know, we worked all winter toward, made all those cars, bracket cars. And it seemed like the smartest thing for me to do right now, to put the alcohol car on hold, because I didn't want to, you know, put anything on the back burner. I like to give it all 100%.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is the alcohol car your car specifically, or is that somebody else's car that you're driving?
Yeah, the car is mine, and then the combination, everything was Dave Parada's.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. All right, that makes sense. And was that something that you kind of always wanted to do? Or, I mean, because at the time that you kind of started driving top alcohol dragster, I mean, I knew you essentially running, you know, super gas and super comp, and then the next thing I know, you're hopping in an alcohol car. Did you know Dave Harada, did he approach you and ask if you wanted to use his stuff, or how did that come about?
Well, I think it was more like a stepping stone thing. My dad and I talked about maybe going to top fuel racing one day, and I wasn't really sure. So we're like, well, let's try alcohol and see how you like it. And I actually got my license in Arthur Gallant's car.
Okay.
They were awesome. I got my license with them, and then we were at PRI, and one of my friends was like, you have your alcohol license, right? Like, you should talk to Dave Harada. So we met up and talked to him. And he's like, yeah, like, it'd be awesome if you drove. And one thing led to another. You know, 3 years we were together, and it was pretty awesome. Driving alcohol made me realize that Top Fuel probably wasn't something that I ever wanted to do, but it was an awesome experience to get my license in the Top Fuel car. But I loved the alcohol car. It was a lot of fun. The guys were awesome. We were like family, and, you know, I still love the class, and I love driving it, but for now, it seems like the smartest thing for me to do is just concentrate on one thing at a time.
Well, and I will say that you really can't argue with the results so far this year, right? I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, you won one of the 20 grand races out at the Spring Fling at Galat, right?
Yeah, for sure. That was pretty awesome.
I actually used you as an example. I think it might have been in last week's show because I was watching at home. And did you win Thursday? Was that the day you won?
Yeah.
So it must have been Friday then that I tuned in. I must have been working and just had it running in the background. And you came up first round on Friday and lost and with a good package. And then you came back around in the buyback round and lost. And I was telling Chris, I'm like, it's just crazy. Those big dollar bracket races are so ridiculously competitive. I'm like, here's a former world champion, fantastic driver, the person who won last night's race and now can't buy around the following day.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so incredible.
The drag racing is humbling, that's for sure. that's probably the main thing I've learned after all these years. You could win five races in a row and then go a year without winning a round. It's just the way it is. I mean, I had a great day Thursday. I had a lot of luck thrown in there. I made some good runs. And then you can go out the next day and make the same exact runs and not win a round.
Right.
With being in the right place at the right time. And if it's your day, it's your day. That's pretty much just what it boils down to. And you can't really hang your head on losing those tight races because you know that they win other rounds. It's kind of just staying consistent and trying not to let it run you over.
Right, right. Now, I mean, do you enjoy the big dollar bracket races? I mean, do you prefer that over class racing?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. We've had a really good year. We've had a lot of fun, an opportunity to make a lot more money, a little more laid back, and a lot more racing. I think I made like 60 or 80 runs or something, or maybe not 60, I think around 60 runs in Galat the weekend I won. So, I mean, I'm making, you know, a crazy amount more runs, getting a lot more seat time. You lose on Thursday, it doesn't matter. You get a brand new chance on Friday, you know, you're not out for the whole weekend. I like the chances, I like the seat time, and I like the money opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. I mean, you just can't really argue with that, you know, Super Gas and Super Comp these days, it just doesn't pay what the bracket races do. And, you know, you have the same equipment. I mean, the equipment doesn't change, right? So your total investment to go out and go racing is exactly the same, aside from entry fees. The entry fees for a big dollar bracket race weekend is probably a little bit higher, but, you know, the cost to travel to the track is the same. Like I said, the investment in the equipment's the same. For God's sakes, why not race for 50 grand rather than racing for 5 grand?
Exactly.
They just need to, we need to come up with a pro tree bracket race. So I like a pro tree. I'm not willing to let that go.
Yeah. The tree doesn't really make a difference for me, but I like it all. I just like to race. That's pretty much what it is.
Now, when you race, I didn't notice. I mean, I do recall you racing the dragster at Galat. Were you racing the dragster and the door car?
Yeah, I raced the dragster and the Camaro. The day I won, I had the dragster and the Camaro both down to 5 cars, and that's when I lost the Camaro and ended up taking the dragster. I did good in both cars. I went rounds in both cars. But, yeah, I had both of them there.
Okay, so I didn't even realize that you were racing the Camaro at that race.
Yep, I had both. We normally take 2 cars for me and then 2 cars for Jason, and then Bryson is another one that drives for us, and he gets a car too.
Oh, okay. Now the Cav, it's a Cavalier, right? Your Super Gas car?
Yeah, it's a Cavalier.
Now, do you race that only in Super Gas really at this point?
Yeah, that's only a Super Gas car. The entire time that's ever been a car, like from the the day it was built, it's only ever been run off throttle stop. It's never been run wide open.
Yeah.
That car was David Tatum's World Championship car.
Okay.
So we just leave it the way it is.
So David Tatum won a championship in it, then you hop in it, and you won a championship in it.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's something to that car. It's a pretty good car.
Yeah, that's a pretty good car, yeah.
not that David Tatum or yourself are slouches as drivers, obviously. You're both big hitters, obviously. You've been doing it a long time and both had a lot of success. So, but, yeah, obviously that's a good piece, too. But no interest in racing that in the bracket classes?
It's not really like a bracket car. It's kind of, it's kind of harder to see out of than the Camaro or a dragster would be.
Okay.
And, it's not really a bracket car. Like, that's specifically a super gas car, so.
Yeah. I mean, she, obviously, I mean, I don't even, well, I'm assuming that the answer is you can, but I mean, you could race a throttle stop at like the spring fling races, right? If you wanted to.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, but like you said, I mean, obviously vision is key with the bracket cars, and yeah, I mean, why take a knife to a gunfight if you don't have to?
Right. I mean, we have our car set up, and there's no really reason to change that the way that one is, so we just leave it.
Yeah. Now, how did you and Jason Lynch first hook up together?
We met in 2011, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And he came to work for my dad's company, Cars.
Oh, okay.
He came up there, and I just went to Florida to do the winter series, and my dad asked if he would kind of watch over me and help me out.
Yeah.
So he was down there, and then the first race, I crashed my dragster. And we got to talking after I crashed, and I told him, I was like, I can't go out like this. Like, I can't go whole winter without getting in a car again. Like, I know that I can do this, and this is what I want to do. And he looked at me and said, hey, jump in my car. And I jumped in his car, and 2 weeks later, I won my first 10 grander, my first race ever.
Wow.
And it was pretty much just history from there.
Wow. Now, when you crashed, do you know what happened when you crashed in the dragster?
Yeah, it was late. It was in Valdosta, and the groove was narrow, and I was a little bit out of the groove. And just as soon as I lifted off the gas, the tires locked up and sent me into the wall.
And I'm assuming you weren't hurt.
No, I was fine. Yeah, thankfully God was watching over me there. I was fine.
Well, that's certainly good. And, yeah, I mean, I guess overall, I mean, that's a nice twist of fate that worked out kind of in your favor. And certainly Jason Lynch is another very well-respected, renowned driver. I mean, he's had a lot of success as well on the circuit. So, I mean, what a great guy to basically have around as a mentor and kind of, teaching you some of the things out there, right?
Yeah, for sure. I really couldn't ask for anybody better to help me out, teach me, and guide me. You know, he's taught me everything I know, and, he can drive amazing, and he knows a lot and can work on pretty much anything and fix anything. So, I'm very fortunate to have him on my team.
Now, I thought I just saw, too, it made me think of it with injuries. You got something going on with your knees?
I'm sorry?
Do you have something going on with your knees?
Oh, no.
I thought I just read someplace that somebody had an MRI or something like that. I would say I must be confusing you with somebody else that I happen to be seeing on Facebook. I remember I was spending some time on the Tedesco Racing page, and I thought it was you that was like just had an MRI or something like that on your knee, and I was like, what's going on with that?
No, that wasn't me. I'm not sure. Somebody might have posted that up there. Somebody else.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that you're in your early 20s and already have a knee problems.
Yeah, right.
Kyle Riley was who posted that.
Yeah, it was Kyle Riley, that's right.
Oh, okay, all right. All right, well, hopefully they're okay. So now where are you this weekend?
I'm at Dragway 42 right now. The American Summer Shootout, it's 320 granders.
Oh, so, I mean, you're actually, probably, what, an hour from your house? I mean, not very far.
No, I think it's like 2.5-3 hours. It's not far at all.
And I'm assuming you got the whole team there again?
Yep, everybody's here. We start tomorrow morning and kick off the kick off the race weekend. We're excited.
Oh, so today was just a travel day and get the pit set up and all the rest of that stuff.
Yeah, they're having a test session at a little gambler's race tonight, so.
Oh, you're not in the gambler's race?
But Bryson's racing the gambler's race, yeah. We've been working all day getting everything ready, so hopefully we're ready for tomorrow.
All right, well, that's certainly good. Now, this particular race at Dragway 42, are they just putting it on, or is it a different promotion?
Marco Bruzzi and Jacob Elrod and I think Travis Colangelo are putting it on.
Okay, yes, and I do remember reading about those guys doing a race as well. So let's see, tomorrow, I'm trying to think, so with the holiday, I'm all screwed up here. So today's Thursday, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, $20,000 each day to win.
It's insane money. It's just insane money.
It is insane money.
And this is, like, considered one of the small ones. Last weekend, we were in Michigan racing at the SFG race, and it was $50,000, $125,000, and $50,000.
$125,000 to win on Saturday?
Yes.
Wow. Who won that race, do you know?
I think it was a local. I'm not really sure who it was.
Wow, that's just incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, considering that, 20-plus years ago, it's like, you know, the best races out there were the NHRA races, and you won yourself a national event, and it was, you know, $15,000 to win, basically, with contingency. And never I would have imagined that a sportsman racer could go out and potentially compete for $100,000 plus on a weekend. Now, I know that there's the million that obviously has been going on for quite a while, and they routinely pay in the $100,000 to $200,000 range to win. But it's also a high-stakes race. I mean, it's big money to enter, so it's kind of the World Series of poker, right? You got to be willing to put up a bunch of money if you want to win a bunch of money, but
it's all gambling. You got to play. If you don't bet big, you don't win big. Simple.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely true. And I mean, I will say that, you know, you go to the big dollar bracket races too, you have to be willing to buy back in essentially at every race too. You know, like Mia said earlier tonight, it's like you go out, you put together a great package, you win one round, you put that same package together in another round, and you lose. Well, you lose something like that. I mean, why wouldn't you buy back in and try that same package all over again, right?
Sure, why not? What's the worst that's going to happen?
It's not my money.
Right. True.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, that's certainly cool though. Now, I mean, and is that really what you're gonna? Are you gonna race any of the NHRA national events this year? Or?
We've been to two of them. We went to Charlotte and Gainesville. We might do Indy and maybe one more. Other than that, we're not sure yet. But besides that, that will be the only NHRA stuff we do.
And are you doing those just for fun, essentially?
Yeah, we're in for. Car is our sponsor. We'll go to those, and that way they can bring dealers in and set up and everything.
Which, so you had mentioned before that Cars is your dad's business?
Yeah, Cars was my dad's business, but he sold it. He's still part owner, but he sold the majority of the company, and okay. They still sponsor our race team.
Okay, and what exactly is Cars?
Cars is, they're vehicle service contracts.
Oh, okay.
Cars. Yeah, and they'll put a service contract on a car up to 200,000 miles. So they do some good business there and help out a bunch of dealers and people with getting their cars fixed.
Okay, I got you. And is it typically all? So I mean, I think is the full name like Cars Protection Plus or something like that?
Yep, it's Cars Protection Plus.
Okay, all right. And is it typically just for used cars, or is it new cars as well?
Yeah, no, it's just used cars.
Oh, okay. How did your dad get involved in that?
He got started. He owned a dealership years ago, and he saw some of the companies that were doing like kind of this, you know, same program, and he thought to himself, "I could do this a lot better." And
yeah.
He started in his garage and grew it to be in. You know, a lot of states and I'm not sure the amount of the number of states they're in now. I think it's the majority of the East Coast.
Yeah,
you know, they've grown it pretty big.
Well, that's certainly pretty cool. I mean, obviously, we'll call it automobiles in general. They're really in your family. I mean, between your uncle racing and your dad starting the business and everything else, I mean, it's been part of your family for quite a while.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And no desire yourself to sell vehicle service contracts?
No, my desire is here at the racetrack, so race and figure out how to make a living doing it.
Now, how many, are you gone literally every weekend pretty much this year?
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's pretty rare we have a weekend off. We try to have one weekend off a month, but it doesn't always work out that way.
Do you...
It's hard to work that in.
I would say, do you care?
No. This is my home. It feels like, you know, these people are my family, and I enjoy being gone. I enjoy traveling, and I love what I do.
Right,
I'm
right.
I'm just trying to soak it in while I can.
Yeah, and I will say that overall, I mean, that's certainly one thing when I was your age that, you know, it's... I want to be nowhere except the racetrack. So, I mean, if you could tell me that, yeah, pretty much you can go racing every single weekend and travel and do it, heck, yeah, I would have gladly done that at that age.
Yeah, when I have a weekend off, I'm still going up to Keystone Raceway on my off weekend and taking laps. So it'll be my time off.
Now, one thing that I had written down here on my notes was, where did the nickname Miss Mia come from?
I don't really know where that came from. I think Jason just always called me Miss Mia. That's just like a Southern thing, I guess. And it just kind of stuck. Everyone started calling me Miss Mia, and I couldn't really shake it, so I was all in it.
So, would you prefer that people not call you Miss Mia, or?
No, I don't. It doesn't bother me at all. I don't mind it.
I say, yeah, I mean, it's rare, I think, these days, honestly, that someone your age, you know, really has a nickname like that. But, I mean, you've had that nickname. It's been years at this point that you've had that people have been calling you that. So,
It's been a while.
So you're doing something right, obviously. Now, I mean, if you didn't race the bracket races, and I mean, you said it kind of at one point in time, you toyed with the idea of, you know, possibly going Top Fuel racing. I mean, would you potentially be interested in going, you know, pro modified racing or pro stock racing instead of Top Fuel?
No, none of that really interests me either.
No?
The more I grow and get older, the more I realize, you know, that's not really, you know, a growing area, I don't think, pro stock or anything like that. Not even that, I just don't really have an interest for it. I like driving. I like being in control of the whole race, you know, the start, the finish, and you're a lot more involved, I feel like, doing, like, bracket racing and stuff. It's not just hitting the tree and getting it down the track. It's taking the finish line or deciding not to take the finish line, dialing your car in. I like everything about that. Not dogging on anybody who races pro mod or pro stock. I mean, that's awesome. I love watching it. I just don't have an interest to do it.
Yeah.
Earlier you said that you didn't, driving the alcohol car told you didn't want to get into Top Fuel. What was the correlation there?
I just realized like how much fun I was having racing Top Alcohol and how much of a job it would become to race Top Fuel. And I felt like I would still have fun, but I wouldn't have as much fun, and I wouldn't be able to race those cars and race as much as I did on the side, bracket racing on the side. And the entire time I raced alcohol, it was very super gas, but I knew that might go away, just, you know, to be for appearances or whatever else you might need to do for Top Fuel. And like I said, I just loved to race. It wasn't like Top Fuel or nothing. It was just I loved to race. And I did toy around with the idea, and alcohol, you know, showed me that I do like going fast, but I don't really care about going any faster, and I don't really care about racing Top Fuel.
Yeah, and I will say that... you know, it's different strokes for different folks. I mean, overall, yeah, I mean, it's certainly not for everybody. I mean, I've told this story again multiple times on the air that, you know, if John Force came up to me and said, hey, you have one opportunity to make a pass in a fuel funny car and this is it right now and it's got to be full throttle, do you want to do it? The answer that I give him is no. I mean, I just don't have any interest in doing that.
Right.
And you know, to your point about it being a job, I worked on a pro stock team for a year, and the year that I did it, before I went out, I was originally thinking, oh, yeah, it'd be really cool. I mean, I still really do like the pro stock cars and the technology, but I was thinking, all right, yeah, go race pro stock and get to watch some races and go hang out. There was no watching races and hanging out. It was from the first thing in the morning till last thing at night, you were working. And I don't think in the whole season of all the races that we went to, I don't think I saw more than three pairs of cars go down the track. You're busy. You're busy the entire time.
Right.
And that's still true even with the drivers, right? I mean, they don't necessarily go hang out in the stands and watch racing. I mean, they're doing PR things for sponsors and signing autographs, and obviously they still have their own duties that they have to do on the car as well. And pretty much, you know, the only way you're watching racing on Sunday is if you go out early.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, and you know, that's the thing. If you're having fun doing what you're doing, God, for God's sakes, keep doing that.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I like what I'm doing. I'm having fun. I don't really see any reason to change it.
Yeah,
you need to do it and have fun and do what I love to do and be thankful for it.
Yeah. Now, your dragster, you race that, you bracket race that, obviously. You race that in top dragster as well, I'm assuming?
If I were to race it, probably.
Oh, you race that, so you only race the dragster in super comp then, okay. Now, how fast will the dragster go all out?
I go like mid 470s, low 480s, and
okay.
Eight.
All right, because I was assuming that when you bracket race the dragster, you're running it all out.
Yeah, it runs all out.
Have you ever tried bracket racing at one of these events with the throttle stop on?
No, I haven't. Just because we're pretty familiar with the air changing, what it will do wide open, and then adding a throttle stop to that would just kind of change what we're used to.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's cool. Some people do it. It's a different way to look at it, and it changes the picture up. But
right,
it's never something I've done.
And is that dragster? Then I'm assuming just a normally aspirated dragster.
Yeah, it's just a Nelson 2015 Nelson dragster that has a 585 in it with a tunnel ram, alcohol carburetors.
Oh, tunnel ram.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a little different, right?
Yeah, I decided last year I wanted to come around, just change it up. We did.
Are you a constant tinkerer? You can't leave stuff alone?
Well, Jason is, and it's kind of rubbed off, so he always likes to change things and do things people aren't doing and
yeah,
be different. So that's pretty much our motto in our pit area.
I have to say that I have a bit of that in me as well, and there are times where I have to tell myself, why are you doing this? You just need to step away from the race car and leave it alone. But yeah, I mean, tunnel ram is cool. You know, growing up, my dad, the Corvette had a tunnel ram on it, and I took it off when, you know, everybody basically went to the single four barrel under the carb stop. You know, now people have gone back to the inline stop where you can do a tunnel ram again. And, yeah,
right.
I have to say, I think that's cool, and I'd like to do that.
Yeah, it is pretty neat. I really like it. I ran it on the stop one time this year, and it ran good, so.
And you said that's on alcohol?
Yeah, it's on alcohol.
I would say,
all of our bracket stuff's on alcohol.
Have you ever seen any? It's funny because, I have guys that I guess are very passionate. I don't know. It seems like everyone's passionate to a certain extent about the fuel they run, whether it's racing gas or E85 or alcohol. I mean, I'm assuming that you're running alcohol because you like the fact that the cars stay cool as you're hot lapping them.
Yeah, that definitely helps.
And if you were to look at the cars that, like, you raced, a few weeks ago, what would you say are the number of cars, the percentage of cars that were running alcohol that were in the later rounds?
Maybe like 80%.
So, pretty vast majority of it. I have to say that You know, I've never really had to hot lap my car. I'm still running racing fuel, but I have to say that I think there's a big advantage to it, and I would definitely really seriously consider it if I had to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just helps, especially, like, sometimes we'll just double enter the same car. It's just going to pump it in that one, or, you know, for whatever reason, just double enter it, so that helps. Like, if you're going up twice in the same round, that definitely helps.
Yeah. Looks like you were going to ask something, Chris.
Just the double entering thing, it just seems like that's a great tool in terms of gathering additional information, you know, and being able to get things more consistent, even if you're running the same car.
Yeah, it does. We do that sometimes. Just it's harder on your stuff. We're making twice the amount of runs. That's why we try to have, like, a door car and a dragster, two dragsters, just to be a little bit more easy on our stuff. But there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, we do it sometimes. But it definitely does help you. I mean, you know what you need in the box, and you know what it's going to go, and definitely helps you get a lot of information.
Now, so when you go to the races, so are you double entering and Jason double entering at the same time?
Yes.
And so what is Jason typically driving then?
Jason has an S10 truck and a Danny Nelson dragster.
Okay, so you are both running then one door car, one dragster.
Yes.
So you're typically on, obviously you're on opposite sides of the ladder of yourself, but you could potentially end up racing Jason if that's the way it went.
Yeah, it doesn't really normally come through ladders until, like, way deep in the round. So.
Right.
Some of these races, like last weekend, there was 450-ish cars, and they didn't ladder them until 16. So, I mean, you have, like, a good 7 rounds before you have to worry about getting on a ladder.
So they went all the way down from 400 to 16 cars before they had to pit door cars against dragsters?
Yeah, they don't run, well, like, at that race, they don't run door cars against dragsters until the final. They keep them separate until the final.
Wow.
It just depends on, like, how they run the race. This race, I think they keep them separated as long as they can, and then they put them together. But
yeah,
it just depends on where you're at, how they do it.
Okay. Yeah, because that was my impression. And you know, you've gone to a heck of a lot more of these races than I have. I always thought that, yeah, they basically ran it until the door cars ran out, and they really couldn't run door cars versus door cars anymore, and then at that point in time it was okay, it's just a free-for-all now, whoever you race. But I guess, yeah, it's certainly nice to be able to keep it all the way down to the final if you can do that. But what happens if you, I mean, I would think you'd have twice as many dragsters as door cars, wouldn't you?
It just depends on where you're at. Honestly, there's normally more dragsters than door cars. I don't know about double, but there's a one of the races we went to, they had 250 door cars and 250 dragsters, just trying to make it even.
Yeah.
Normally there's more, I'd say.
So they must have capped entries there. I wonder if that was one of the Spring Fling races?
No, it wasn't the Spring Fling. It was one of the SFG races Reynolds, Georgia.
Yeah.
They capped it.
I mean, it just amazes me, too. I mean, Chris, when you think about it, I mean, 500 entries.
You don't see a dragster until you're down to the last 16.
Well, I mean, it's that part just 500 entries. Just 500 entries. That's all. I mean,
you get that all the time. Western Super Auto Association. 500 entries. No,
I mean,
you
look at, I mean, NHRA with the class racing and stuff like that, and they, you know, they instituted the quotas. And aside from, you know, some of the really big races, you still have quotas that go unfilled.
Right.
And you know, geez, for God's sakes, I mean, 500 cars, and, you know, obviously you have local guys that are going to race at those events, but, I mean, you're going to have lots of people that travel to those events as well. And, again, you're not talking about it being $50 to enter or to race for $20,000 or $50,000 to win. I mean, it's not ridiculous, but, you know, for a total weekend, you're easily going to spend $1,000, $1,500 in entry fees for one car.
You got to gamble big to win big. I mean,
it just amazes me, honestly, that the promotions are able to find that many people, and it's really a testament that tells me that it's a testament to what a great program those promotions are putting on, because if they weren't, people wouldn't go.
Yes, but there's another part of that too, is look at where these races are happening. They're not happening in Western New York. They're not happening in the Finger Lakes. You're going to a part of the country where you're not. If you put on a circle track race that paid that kind of money, you probably still wouldn't see 500 entries out here.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. It's just geography. The where they're going for these races, like you said, people are traveling to them.
Yeah, and I will agree about that.
I mean, you could have the same style race in Virginia, and you would be flirting similar numbers. You go to Georgia, and it's no-brainer. You go to, I mean, we can start singling out different parts of different states if we need to, but I think you get the idea of what we're saying here. It's not, we're not comparing apples to apples. It's so foreign to us because we've never seen it. We haven't found a way to get that here.
Right.
We've got to go to it. If we decided to go to it, it would be commonplace.
Right. Yeah. No, and I have to say I agree. I mean, and, you know, Galat is a track that I have never been to. And when I was watching Miss Mia a few weeks ago compete there, mm-hmm. I couldn't believe how nice that track was. Now, I had heard it was nice.
Right.
But from what I saw, it was a premier track. And obviously the spring fling races that the Biondos put on, you know, the ones at Bristol, ones at Vegas. I forget where the other one is. Where's the other one, Mia?
Galat.
Oh, Galat. Yeah. They run at Galat too. so, I mean, you're talking about, yeah, just premier racetracks as well that people enjoy going to. People don't want to go to, you know, crap racetracks anymore. It's, you know, you're going there for a weekend to enjoy yourself. I mean, at the end of the day, every sports and racer that's out there for the most part is out there to have fun and enjoy themselves. And yeah, they're trying to win money at the same point in time, but nobody likes driving through the mud and getting flat tires because they got stones in their slicks and all the rest of that type of stuff. And,
you're talking about spending money?
I would say, is that your trailer that we're looking at, a trailer full of transmissions and converters?
Yeah, that was one of our trailers. Jason has the shop that we loaded up to take up to Marco Brucey to get freshened up.
That was a lot there.
Well, you said, I mean,
we
you
kind of have a lot of parts.
I mean, you
I mean,
said
we have, I
go,
think,
go
have
ahead,
a bar,
Mia.
So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, you said last week, or the week at Galat, I guess, when you won that race, you said you made 60 passes.
That's just crazy. Mm-hmm.
So,
and both my dragsters come out.
Yeah, so obviously that's two cars, right? But still, I mean, 30 passes a car, let's call it, on average. I mean, that's a lot of passes in one weekend.
Yeah.
You know, maintenance-wise, how long is it before you're taking the converter out and having them freshened up?
It usually just, you know, depends on the year and how many races and whatnot, but we usually try to make them last a whole year.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously, Abruzzi does all your trannies and converters?
Yeah, Abruzzi does all our stuff, and he does an awesome job and makes it, you know, our stuff really does last, and we really like the work he does, and it's reliable, so we don't really have any problems. I mean, sure, you know, everybody has problems. But,
yeah, everyone's going to break something.
Yeah, for me to sit here and say we've never broken a train or converter, I'd be lying. But it really lasts for us. It's durable for as many races and rounds as we put in. You know, it's really amazing.
We're talking 30 passes in all weekend from testing to the last pass?
Sure.
Yeah.
Just to be clear on that, I mean, I didn't know how many times we had to go through buybacks and supplemental rounds and stuff like that, you know? It's like...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the race that you won on Thursday, Mia, how many rounds was it?
10 rounds.
10, yeah.
It was 10 rounds. I lost 8th round in my Camaro.
So, yeah, I mean, that's craziness. But, I mean, you start thinking about, all right, I'm putting 30 runs a weekend on my car, and now you're racing as much as Mia is. Yeah, within a couple of months, you're at 250, 300 passes, and you're probably not even halfway through the racing season. You're probably only a third of the way through the racing season.
Oh, yeah, no. We try. Jason and I's goal, usually, like, when we would go to the winter series, which would be 3 weeks. It'd be 3 weeks of racing. usually like Thursday through Sunday,
yeah.
Wednesday through Sunday, ish. Our goal would be to make 400 runs in that 3 weeks. That's how you know you had a good winter series.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean.
Good for you.
Well,
that's
yeah.
crazy.
Thanks. I mean, we love it. We make a lot of runs. It's tiring and it's wearing sometimes, but we love what we do.
Well, I was just going to ask that. You know, when you're running, it's two people running four cars. Obviously, when the racing is going on, there's not a lot of time when you guys are standing around not doing anything, right?
No, that doesn't really happen ever.
But I mean, that's a lot of internal,
that can be done.
That's a lot of internal motivation too, though. You know what I mean? To set a goal like that, and then you got to keep wanting to go and be ready, like knowing that we gotta push through this if we're gonna hit that mark. Because that's a lot of passes.
It's a ton of passes, and that's why I asked him. Mean, when it'd be different if it was just Mia driving two cars and Jason was just there as a support personnel. That obviously now you're splitting up the work, and when Mia's racing, you know, Jason is just, you know, helping at the starting line and going back to the trailer and stuff like that. But if he's racing his own cars, obviously, you know, he can't be standing around saying, okay, I'm going to do nothing but, you know, baby Mia while, you know, the whole weekend I got my own stuff to take care of. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, it literally has to be when you go to those races, if you're running that many rounds between the two of you, that at the end of the night, you guys got to be exhausted.
Yeah, it's definitely exhausting, and it's endurance. That's what we tell ourselves. It's just endurance, sticking with it and fighting through it. You kind of just got to, you know, like I said, don't get behind it and don't let it run you over. And
right.
It's tiring and exhausting sometimes, but it pays off.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and that's assuming that it's tiring and exhausting on a normal weekend, not on a weekend when you have a problem and you're thrashing constantly trying to figure out what the heck is going on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. There's some weekends where it's always something going on and fix this, fix that, and then there's some weekends where it's just smooth and, you know, everything's running good.
Speaking of smooth, Jason told me to make sure that I was prepared with a couple questions. For this, which I thought was really kind of him, since we've done 40 of these, and I never felt like I wasn't prepared before, but he decided to be my dad a little bit and make sure that I was ready. So on the topic of smooth, I was wondering if you had any thoughts on how smooth Marc-Andre Fleury's been for the Vegas Golden Knights, seeing as how you're a Pens fan.
Oh, heck yeah. No, I'm a huge Pens fan and huge Fleury fan, and he's been doing good. I feel like he's been doing phenomenal, really. I hope they win. I'm pulling for the Knights right now.
I kind of do, too. I want to see the Knights win just because it's an expansion team that came out of the blocks and they got a shot at winning the Stanley Cup in their first season. You know, nobody's done this since the Blues did it, you know, decades ago,
yeah.
Which is cool. But my buddy Brad loves the Penguins. And bunch of the folks that I know down in Pittsburgh, they're huge, huge marks for the Penguins. But I can't really stand the Penguins. I'm a huge Blackhawks fan, so if you were here, we'd probably have to fight.
Yeah, they did good. They made the playoffs this year, didn't they?
They did not make the playoffs, no. No, they did not.
Yeah.
Right now, the Penguins, the Bruins, the Blackhawks, and the Sabres have the same statistical chances of winning the Stanley Cup.
Yes, well, I guess that's a good thing. Yeah, and I will say that I don't know how we turn this into a hockey conversation, but being a Sabres fan, I'm really torn on the Golden Knights because
to cherry pick anybody that they wanted. They built a great team.
It's sickening enough. That they're as successful as they are in the first season, right? But to go out and win the Stanley Cup like this, when the Sabres have tried for 50 years and haven't been able to do it, it makes me sick to my stomach.
Yeah. I guess I didn't get to pick whoever, but good for them. I'm a Flurry fan, so like I said, I'm pulling for them. I don't like the Capitals at all.
No to the Caps.
Yeah, I'm not a big Caps fan. I guess I wouldn't be terribly disappointed if Ovechkin won a Stanley Cup, but yeah, I guess if I had to pull for somebody, I guess I'm pulling for the Golden Knights, but hopefully it'll make Vegas pay out a lot of money, if nothing else.
Absolutely. Jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
Gamble big, you win big.
So was that the only question you prepared, was a hockey question?
You've taken them all already. I have stuff ready. I just didn't have to.
Well, yeah, and see, this always happens to me. I tell Chris all the time that would you jump in and ask some questions for God's sakes and stop being producer? Because it looks like I end up basically monopolizing the conversation, which I don't want to do.
But you did a great job.
Oh, well, thank you.
There's good questions out there. There's good content. I mean, if you've noticed, it's already... We've already been doing this for 55 minutes.
We're at an hour.
It motored right through.
Right, right. Yeah, we're at an hour.
Gave me a chance to find some sweet pictures, too. There's some great stuff on Mia's page.
Yeah, she does. I mean, I will say that I don't know how much time you spend updating the Facebook page and the web page and everything else, but, yeah, you do have a lot of really nice content there, and certainly for anyone's watching, if you haven't gone out and checked those pages out, you should.
Thank you. Yeah, I try to keep up with it, but it gets tricky sometimes, but... how much we travel and how much we're on the road, but I try.
I would say, how many nights a year are you spending on the road?
A lot. I left my house Tuesday and drove to Nashville to work in the shop for 2 days, and then we went straight to Huntsville, Alabama to race for 2 days, and then I went back to the shop to work for 2 days, and then we drove to Michigan to race for 6. And then I was home for 2, and now I'm here.
Enjoy it while you can.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I love it. I'm not home much, but that's all right.
That's perfect. I mean, I love the fact that you have that much passion for the sport and that you're willing to invest that kind of time into it. The time and the effort that goes into this is not lost on us and the folks that are listening at home. And at the same time, I think there's a lot of people that are listening right now that are absolutely jealous. They want to be able to do what you're doing, and the fact that you appreciate it so much, I think that's refreshing too. You know, it's not something that was just plopped in your lap and said go race 6-10 days at a time. You know, it's something they had to work for and build up to. It's commendable. Is there anybody? I know we mentioned a bunch of names. We talked about Racing Jason. We talked about Abruzzi and all that other stuff. Your dad and your uncle's influence. Is there anybody that you wanted to make mention of here before we part ways for the evening that maybe we missed?
We Cars Protection Plus, VP Racing Fuels is huge. They help us out. They help us out a bunch. We love their product.
The hood decals awesome.
Racing Tire. He's always been a huge supporter of our team and made sure we had everything we need. And then he said Abruzzi, Wilkerson builds our engines, ATM builds our carburetors, and then Danny Nelson builds our dragsters. So huge shout out to them. They help us. They keep our race team looking good and running good, and we appreciate everything they do for us.
We showed a picture a few minutes ago of the hood of the Cavalier with the big VP Racing Fuels logo on it. It's such a cool looking decal. It's a good look. It's a great looking car. I got a thing for blue race cars. I just love it.
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah. I love white and blue, that combination that they've got on their cars. They look great. And then we got, just so Jason didn't feel left out, when you were talking about his S10, we got a picture up of his truck, too.
Perfect. I appreciate it.
Well, Mia, I appreciate you coming on and hanging out with us for a while. This has been insightful, and I just can't get over the amount of travel and time that you invest into this. It's a labor of love, for sure.
Well, I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity, and I'm glad to share everything I can with you.
Good luck this weekend, and make sure you keep in touch and let us know how things are going through the summer, okay?
Thank you, guys.
We appreciate it, Mia. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
There goes Mia Tedesco, Miss Mia.
what? Yeah, I just don't have the effort to do that anymore. I just want to go out and have fun. And yeah, the fact that she's already realized that at this age, that I don't want to take on all that work and responsibility, and I am enjoying what I'm doing, and I want to keep doing this as long as I can. Good. Yep. For her.
The goal is to have fun, and God love her, she found a way to do it.
Oh,
on
yeah.
a huge scale.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, 400 passes in 3 weekends. I mean, between the two of them, they made more passes in that trip down south than I've made probably in the last, I bet you, 5-6 years
yeah,
combined.
Several years. Yeah. Just in case anybody's watching, or they're watching on demand or on the replay, for a minute there, we did lose audio. We got it back, so we did bounce back. But again, we were just talking and hitting on the focus that Mia has to be able to do this and know where she wants to be. The fact that she was in very close to getting into a top fuel car and turned around and said instead, hey, it's going to be too much like work. And to keep it fun is going to keep it fresh, and to keep it fresh is going to make you want to keep doing it.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, and she definitely has a passion for it still, that's for sure.
Yep. What do you think? Did we say everything there's to say here from the North Park building at Academy Square?
I think so. I guess we could congratulate, the winners and runners-up from the TNT races last weekend.
Got that there?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know Mark Herbold beat Pete Maduri Jr. at Lancaster on Friday night, and Tyler Helene beat Chris Van Balen on Saturday night at Empire. It was a bit of a trial, I guess, at Empire. They had a few oil downs and a couple of guys hitting cones, but they got it in and had a couple of good races, and I know it was as competitive as ever, so congratulations to those guys.
Can't go wrong with that. That's going to conclude the impromptu motorsports block here at Finger Lakes One, opening the night at 5:30 with Crash Course Podcast, following up at 7 o'clock with Final Round, and we pulled it off successfully.
Barely.
The camera burned up. We were about 5 minutes in, and this camera in front of me burned up. That thing was gone, and then we lost audio late in the going, and I don't know what I did. I think I just shut it off. I don't know. Seems reasonable. Is what it is. Yeah. Got to be a bad producer someday in order to be a good one, right? Well, that's going to do it for us here at the North Park building at Academy Square. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Big thanks to Mia Tedesco for coming on and being part of this one. That's going to do it. We'll be back again in 2 weeks. Real quick, I was Facebook stalking her friends list, and I found contacts for Marcos and for Pete and a couple of the other guys that we made reference to. So
yep.
Maybe we should send some Facebook messages.
I think you're right.
Recruit a couple of people.
Yeah.
We'll, production meeting afterwards.
Okay. Sounds good.
That's going to do it for us here. We'll see everybody again next time. That's going to do it for episode number 42 of the Final Round. We'll see you again.
This has been the Final Round Drag Racing Podcast, coming to you live from the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. We'll see you right back here again in 2 weeks. Thanks for watching.